Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for the last episode before Election Day 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, the countdown has begun.
Yes, and welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Well, Catherine, obviously you live in America and not Northern Ireland, because over there the countdown's over. I just read that they're paying out bets for people who bet on President Obama to win re-election. So confident of it, they're giving their money up, although I'll be honest, I'm a huge Democrat, but I don't know that if I had to give up money, I'd do it until the actual thing happened.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
They're even more confident than I am, and I know Tim accuses me all the time being overconfident. Crazy story. Well, tonight we got a good show. We're going to have Brad Crone coming on in about 10 minutes talking about North Carolina. And then in the second half hour, David Neer from Daily Kos Elections is going to come on one final time before the election. He's actually going to call from Daily Kos headquarters. To me, that's pretty exciting. Our show must be moving up in the world for us to get the number one Democratic blog getting a call from the actual headquarters about 7:40. And in between that, we'll talk about a few things and even try to give all our predictions for different races. And one story, because early voting has been the story, to me it's happening today in Florida. And in Florida, they had cut back the Sunday before Election Day souls to the polls, early voting day, if you will. Rick Scott did in with that. Well, it wasn't missed on some Democratic operatives that you could still do same-day in-person absentee voting, which, essentially functions just like early voting. Well, so many people showed up in Miami-Dade in particular that they looked at the crowd and said, there's no way we can get everybody through, and they closed the thing up. Well, obviously they were restricting access to the ballot, and they had to open back up. That's hard to say how long voting will go on, but they said anybody in line by 5 can vote. And I know yesterday there were reports of 9-hour lines for early voting in Florida. Tim, do you think they're going to have people voting at, midnight in Florida?
They're going to have people voting well after the polls close, I think, in a lot of the major cities around the country. This happened 4 years ago with such a huge turnout. I think we're going to have a pretty good turnout on Tuesday. I think you're going to see a lot of that, especially in some of the states where the gap is less than 5 points. And I think you're going to see, let's say you're watching Wolf Blitzer, I think you're going to see him look at the camera and say the polls are closed and such, but CNN can make no projection right now. And so I think the evening is going to wear on a lot slower than it did 4 years ago. And Florida is going to be one of those places. They're going to be voting well after the polls close there. David, part of the polls close at 7 o'clock in Florida, part of them at 8 o'clock. When the polls close in the panhandle, I bet they're still voting in Miami and Jacksonville, don't you?
Very possible. I meant tonight, much less.
Oh, tonight.
Tonight, the same day our absentee voting is going on. I think these numbers are huge. Catherine, what do you think that means for the race that they've been so overwhelmed with early voters and, like Tim's saying, Election Day voters?
Well, I think, like Wendy Davis mentioned, was it last week that she was on, that the early voting really does help the parties determine, who's voting and try to get the rest of the voters out. So in that way, it's great for that. I'm the person that the party doesn't like. I haven't voted yet. I'm voting on Tuesday. But It's always hard for me to tell this close to the election. I always start to get a little nervous, you know. I sort of put myself on I don't watch any television. I read the blogs and I read the paper, but I try not to watch the news because it just makes me crazy. Today I saw all these anti-Obama ads on TV, and I was just like, I just sort of want a little mini news blackout, just the television news. I'm okay with the, you know, reading the news, but what I'm concerned about is the Northeast and how they're going to vote, how that's going to happen. I'm sure they've got a plan, but it's a big concern to me with everything that's going on there.
They actually say that the in the Northeast, while you may have some Democratic strongholds that have trouble voting, the people that have been polled in that area have shifted more to the president, a lot more independents, some Republican-leaning voters have come more in the president's camp. And that's going to help, I guess, kind of solidify that Massachusetts and Connecticut Senate race, which I guess are the two most in question for the Democrats, although I think those two races would have been won by us irregardless, but it just makes those breathe a little easier. And that Scott Brown, who's a Republican, may go down right there. I guess that increases the Democratic majority. And the Connecticut Senate seat, I can't clear what's going on with that. That one, Linda McMahon runs again, but she was incumbent. And I don't think our guy's an incumbent there either. Is that the Lieberman seat, Tim?
It is. And interesting thing going on there that I was noticed on some of the blogosphere today. Linda McMahon's people have actually been running some vote Obama, vote McMahon type.
Yeah, I sent one to y'all.
Yeah, was it D'Amato years ago that did that in New York, vote D'Amato and vote Clinton? So, you know, I think she's running in the latest poll 6 points behind there. And so she's trying to, you know, use any little trick to get her over the hump. Her money's kept it close, but think she's going to lose.
Yeah, one interesting thing to watch there will be, do they do anything on their three-hour television program? Because, you know, her husband and son-in-law and daughter, they all run a television program for 3 hours on the U.S. Network, one of the highest-rated cable programs there is. And do they try to do anything?
What more could they do?
I'd be interested. I don't know where they're coming from, but it would not surprise me if they're coming from Hartford.
But what more could they do that surely she has not already done with all the millions that she's thrown at the race?
I don't know. The main thing she could do would be move. You know, if they would have said 20 years ago, particularly back when her husband was having all these steroid troubles with the government, when he pretty much almost went to jail there, if they would have said, look, I want to run for office, and she probably didn't know it at the time, if they had moved to some, you know, more Republican-friendly state.
Like Georgia.
And there it is. They bought World Championship Wrestling, which was a turn company that was based out of Georgia. When they bought it, they could have said, oh, yeah, we're going to move to Georgia, and then she'd have been set up to run in Georgia. Now, she probably would have never won the Georgia primary, would have been a problem there, because she'd have been too liberal for Georgia Republicans. But, I mean, she could have actually won the general in a different state. The Northeast is just, it's just a wasteland for Republicans. It's obviously what the South is for a lot of Democrats in many ways. And so it's just something to look at. Well, I guess we can go ahead and start doing our predictions. When Brad calls in, we can stop it, but we'll just have one of us. I guess we'd be best off. Let's just talk about the top-line race. How do each one of us feel the presidency is going to come out? Obviously, we can pick a winner, and then we can also talk about states that we see shifting or close states or something like that. Tim, I think you've probably put more work into this than anybody, so I'll give you the chance to go first.
Okay. I've agonized over this an electoral vote here or there type thing, but right now I'm going to call it 281 to 257 for the president. It's all about Ohio. If he wins there, I think he's got it won. Romney could win the popular vote. I think it's going to be within 2 to 3% max either way. It looks like that's starting to break to the president, too. Romney could still win this thing, but the president just had, as you told me earlier, the best week of the campaign for him this week, and I think that swung it to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, you actually, this is probably the most optimistic you've been in many weeks, and that just shows how good the president's week was. Catherine, what is your thoughts on the race?
Well, I'm going with the president. I think he's going to prevail. I think it's going to be very close and very late. I think we're going to be looking at Ohio, worrying about some of the other states, and then also, you know, I mean, we'll talk about this later, but also some of the down ballot races. But again, you know, I think this week with the crisis in the Northeast and the help of Chris Christie, of all people, I think really helped the president. He looked very engaged and interested, which of course we know he is, but I think this was an opportunity for him to show just how much of a leader he is. So I'm not good at the numbers. You know, I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be closer than Tim says. But I think, you know, after a late night, we will prevail as Democrats.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll go and pick. And I actually think it's going to be a little louder than I guess y'all are saying. I think the president wins. I think the president's going to win by 4 points. Now, he won by 7 last time. So
Ooh.
I guess Republicans can take some solace in that. And I tell you, I'll go to the states now. The president's going to lose Indiana, and that's going to be the only state he loses that he didn't win in 2008. I see a trend coming. I mean, people were talking, oh, North Carolina's gone, Florida's gone, and if you look, the president is playing there. The first lady's going there tomorrow to North Carolina. The president was today in Florida. Bill Clinton was just in North Carolina. I think that he's going to win every state. Now, he's going to do better in Arizona, not going to win it, but do better. I think he also probably maybe does better in South Carolina, doesn't win it, and maybe does better in Montana, which will help in that Senate seat. So I guess the Republicans can say, hey, Romney did better than McCain. We gained 3 points in the polls. We won back Indiana, although the big prize there is the Senate seat, and we're going to pick up Richard Lugar's Senate seat. I'd trade away the state in the Electoral College for another vote in the Senate anyway. So I think it's going to be a pretty good day for the Democrats, and it's going to be like, this is how it should have been all along. I think in elections, a lot of times, people have to kind of toy around, at least the, you know, undecided independent voters, have to toy around with the other option, and that debate kind of gave them the chance to do that. The big question would be is, you know, if the president never lets him in the debate, would it have happened in, say, a second debate where he might have let his guard down? Or would something else have happened to cause it to be tightened up? Because, you know, if you look at any campaign, Walter Mondale was ahead. Michael Dukakis was ahead. John McCain was ahead. So it may have been that just Mitt Romney was going to have to, you know, pump up at some point. And if you look at some of the projections and other things, you know, you could argue that Mitt Romney's never been ahead in this race in the Electoral College. I think you could point to some national polling where you could point to a 2-point lead or so, which is really one of the smallest leads ever in a race for that to be your best time, if you will. But that's how I see it. And Tim, I heard you kind of groan. You can rebut if you'd like to.
Well, four percentage points. I don't know, David. It hasn't. There was a poll came out late this evening. I believe it was the IBD poll, maybe, or Pew, one of the two, and it had Obama up 50 to 47, and I swear that's the first national poll, and I don't know when that either one of them has even been 3 points up. Like Talking Points Memo, which is a liberal leaning site that tracks polling averages, has Obama up by barely a point. Real Clear Politics has Obama up like a half a point. Now we're talking, if you say 4 points, dude, we're talking 6 million votes there. I just don't see how they could possibly be separated by that many votes, and I'll tell you why. I think Romney is going to run up a pretty good vote in some red states, and Obama is going to win some of the toss-up states close, and I think that's going to keep the popular vote close. Do I make a good point?
Well, I think a week or two ago that might have been the case, but the president just seems to be trending, and he's got the momentum, and that's why I think more of the undecideds are going to break for him. Another thing that I think is going to help him is I think this may be a year where the Libertarians get a little more than usual, because I still think there's some Republicans that just really don't have a lot of use for Mitt Romney, and if they don't think he's going to win or has a real chance, this is a chance for them to send a message and say, hey, I'm going to help grow the Libertarian movement. Catherine, what do you think about third-party candidates this time?
Well, I think that third-party candidate, what's his name, Gary Johnson?
Yeah, he's the Libertarian, and he's a former Republican.
And then there's the Green Party one, too. I don't think the Green Party, Jill Stern, I don't think she's going to do very well. But I think we might be surprised by the number of votes that Gary Johnson gets as the Libertarian. I've actually been thinking about that a lot lately, that, like you said, there might be some disenchanted Libertarian-type Republicans who are, you know, not happy with some of the things that Mitt Romney has said and the way he flip-flops. I think that is the kind of thing that really bothers the more thoughtful and independent-leaning people, that, you know, they might just say, well, I can't really vote for the president. I'm not happy with what he's done, but I can't vote for Romney, so I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson. Or if there isn't another election in their state that they feel strongly about, they'll stay home.
Yeah, I mean, that could figure in. Talk about the Green Party. We haven't spoken much about the Green Party, but I think after what happened in 2000, they are seen by spoilers. And also their name, the Green Party, it means that, you know, pretty much they're single issue with the environment. I know they have platforms on other issues, but it's branded that way. So then you have to look at the Democratic Party, I guess even the Republican Party, Libertarian Party, and say, where are they on the environment? Well, President Obama, I think, has done a pretty good job on the environment, you know, emphasized things like green jobs. Now, I know somebody that's so far left on the environment like the Green Party. I mean, if the president's not a vegan, they may take issue with that or what have you. But I think his administration's been, it marginalizes that party.
I think the big issue that has gone a completely undiscussed in the debates and in all the policy lead-up is climate change. Now, they're talking about it this week because of the giant storm. But I have a lot of friends who are diehard Democrats who are very frustrated by the fact that it wasn't even discussed at any of the debates. And it is a huge issue, and it's something that we really need to get in front of, but we're not discussing it because it's a tough row to hoe. I mean, it's going to mean a lot of potential changes in our lifestyles. And I know some people who are very troubled by the fact that it hasn't been discussed.
Well, I mean, we didn't discuss it a lot in the debates, but did that mean the president did a bad job on it? I mean,
I think a lot of people feel like he did.
It just doesn't come up.
Well,
a lot of people don't like the president on the issue, you're saying?
I think so. I think they've been frustrated by the lack of progress and the fact that it doesn't get any attention. And that, you know, I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but I do think that that's one of the issues that is frustrating to some, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, wacko left-wing, you know, old hippies like me. I'm talking about, you know, ordinary Democrats who are, you know, maybe they're scientists, maybe they're environmentalists, but they're still Democrats, and they're frustrated. So,
Yeah, and I hadn't heard that the left was very angry at all with the president.
Don't have very many far-left friends.
I guess so. Well, you've got to remember, I live in a place where I'm more likely to have far-right friends.
Right.
And I'm seen just as a weirdo hippie for having an O on my truck. And I'm pretty far from a weirdo hippie. That's the kind of environment I live in.
And that's our Big Ten. And that's, you know, but there are people who are frustrated with the president on the left, about Afghanistan, about Guantanamo, there's a whole bunch of things that people feel that he has not done enough about.
That's a whole conversation
that shouldn't be had the, 2 days before the election. Because, the fact is that this is where we are.
Yeah, and that's just like if you look at the flip side of this thing, there's a lot of Republicans that are so far to the right that they've pulled their party. They've been more successful, I guess you'd say, in pulling their party so far to the right that they can't even get elected because people see them as so out of touch. Whereas the Democratic Party stays a little closer to the center, and we're in power, if you will. So maybe somebody can take solace in that.
There's a lot of people that feel like the party has gone much further to the right. If you look at, previous, if you go back 20, 30 years, I don't think Reagan could get elected as a Republican right now. I'm sure he couldn't.
No, the Republican Party
way too liberal.
Moved to the right. I think there's just no doubt that they've moved to the right. Well, Tim, what do you think about third-party candidates? We don't want to get your chance to get in there on that.
I'm not sure they're as strong as you might think they are, David. In all the polling I've been looking at, I've been mentally just giving all the third-party candidates together nationally 1%, and on a day that I felt like it may be 2%. And I think that'll be about the extent of it. In certain states where there's ballot initiatives, drugs or something, legalization that might, attract libertarians or something like that, they might spike up a few points. I'm not sure exactly who they would hurt if they did that in a certain state. But I'm just thinking... Now, remember, again, if we talk in 1% or 2%, we're talking 1.5 to 3 million votes. It's nothing to sneeze at. But in the big scheme of things, I think that the winning presidential candidate could win the popular vote this year with 49.5%.
Yeah. Well, you're saying it'd be that close. And at one point, if you'd asked me a few weeks ago, I might have thought the
people. I'm not saying it'd be that close. I'm saying that if one of the two candidates gets 49.6%, I think that is enough to win the popular vote. Now, if they get something over that, of course, they're going to win it anyway. But I think 49.6 is the magic number.
Yeah. Well, let me switch gears now, and we can get some more predictions. Tim, once again, if you want to go ahead and do your Senate predictions, and then and you can just pick whatever races you feel are the close ones that need, selecting on, and then you can pass it to Catherine, and I'll come and do last on this one.
Well, I think the Democrats are going to pick up some seats. I think the Republicans are going to pick up some seats. And let me just throw the shocker out there. I think when the smoke clears, we're going to be right where we were, a 53-47 split. So that's what I'm predicting.
I am predicting exactly the same thing. I don't know which ones will, go which way, but I think it's going to be essentially the same.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I wanted to handle it a different way because I don't know. I know it's going to be close to where it is now, but
yeah.
I do think we're going to pick up almost every close race except for Arizona. I think that's the one we don't pick up. But
we could lose Montana.
We
could lose Montana.
We could lose it,
but
I'm told that we should win it. We'll win Missouri. I think Missouri is going to be closer than it should be. If you look at what Todd Akin said, you know, a few weeks ago, and I think he's going
to
do better
than Richard
Murdoch. I think we get we get Indiana with ease.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Missouri, we're going to get it, but it's going to be tighter, and that may say more about Claire McCaskill than anything.
Right. Exactly.
But I think that's going to be a tough one. We're going to win Connecticut, and we're going to win
Massachusetts.
It's going to be a pickup. We're going to win the Virginia seat. I mean, really,
it's
going to
be close.
It's going to be close. And then Angus King is almost going to be like a pickup for us,
right,
even though, you know, he's not a Democrat. So I think we're going to do really, really well. Carmona, and here's the thing. If Richard Carmona wins, and Shelley Berkeley, I forgot about that, in Nevada, those two candidates win, that's going to give more fuel to the fire that the polling of Hispanics is off, because we've been hearing this we've heard this from media types, pollsters, professors that fell out at Stanford, how bad the polling services are at polling Hispanics, and the technologies are just not working. Those are two states with heavy Hispanic population. We could see those candidates down 3, 4, 5 points and somehow win just because the polling was that far off. So those seats are not out of the question. And if we win all those seats, then we may pick up a cushion, which we'll need for 2014, but that's for a later kudzu vine. Have y'all been hearing a lot about Hispanic polling and how off it is? I mean, it's gotten more and more of those articles, not less.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I think it's way off.
Yeah, I have, and a lot of the smart people are scratching their heads about it. Here's one thing. They think, well, that there's no way Hispanics would come out with the big percentages for the president that they came out 4 years ago. But on the other hand, they pretty well know that there's 4 million more of them registered to vote, which would lead them to believe, well, okay, maybe a few more are coming out. So the polling has not been, it's been all over the lot on it. I think they're confused about how many Hispanics are actually getting involved, getting engaged, getting excited about this thing. Hispanic leaders, though, David, I will tell you this, are saying in unison that, yes, they are being undercounted in this polling, and, yes, they are going to be there to vote. So I don't know.
I mean, you're seeing registration, you're seeing turnout numbers, and in some states it's not going to affect things. I mean, like, for instance, here in Georgia, you know, any of our races, it's not going to affect it in any substantial way. But those western states, you have major numbers of Hispanics, it will.
I've got an issue for you. You sent us the Georgia poll. They are saying with a straight face that Mitt Romney is going to get 53% of the Hispanic vote here.
I'll tell you what, that's
crazy.
I'm glad you mentioned that poll, Tim, because if you we're within single digits in that poll. And so if you look at that poll, you're thinking, okay, we're within 8 points. Barack Obama's 44, Mitt Romney's 52. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think that, you know, Georgia may be closer to 6 points instead of 8. Well, then you start looking at the numbers. White voters. I've seen white voters as high as like 24, 25 for the president. That's about 62, 65% of the electorate. He can do better than that number. That's the low watermark. Black voters, 88, 10. He could go 95, 5. I mean, I think they must call Herman Cain's house every time they do one of these polls in Georgia. Because remember, there was one that Mark Roundtree put out that had 22% of black voters voting for Romney. And then you're right, we have Hispanics. Romney's winning Hispanics in Georgia, according to this poll. Now, maybe this poll's right, and this poll's obviously better than that one Mark Roundtree did, that when he got the numbers back, he should have asked for his money back because they did a horrible job. And anybody knew they did a horrible job. But then if you look at this, we could exceed these numbers. Well, Tim, if we lose Georgia by about 6 points,
Will that say that the election in this state,
if we lose Georgia by 6 points, we're having a very, very good night nationwide.
That's right. That's
what
I'm
saying.
That's what I'm predicting. And that's exactly what I'm predicting. I'm looking at what I see in these polls, particularly. I take a Georgia and I extrapolate it out. I can take an Arizona poll and extrapolate it out. And in some of these other states, you can do the same thing. So that's why I think we're a better. I think, Tim, you know what you and I are seeing a lot of is we're seeing a lot of cars with the little box gloves that say Mitt. We're seeing all the stinking yard sign because a lot of the people that voted for John McCain are now voting for Mitt Romney and putting a sign in. And last time I checked, signs don't vote because we know a lot of good people that probably would have been elected a long time ago because they have. 3 signs for every vote they get. And so I just think we're seeing greater intensity in some of the whitest of white areas, and it's kind of skewing our perception.
I don't think it's that at all. I read guys like Charlie Cook and, some other people like that, that they all seem to think that the popular vote is going to be, close. And for the reasons that I gave earlier, that the president is going to run up a pretty good electoral lead in all the battleground states and win them fairly close, and that Romney is going to run a lot better in red states than John McCain did and make up that, difference in the popular vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see what some of these states do. Now, speaking of Georgia, let's go ahead and keep talking. And I guess we can almost do this in prediction fashion. I sent another poll to y'all that was not the YouGov poll. It was the Progress Georgia. I'm drawing a blank on the name. It's the group Ted Terry works for and Tim Arborg. They did a poll that actually had the Public Service Commission race put in, and it looked like Steve Oppenheimer could possibly win that race. Now, he'll have to have some ticket splitters. He'll have to probably pick up some Romney voters. But is there a chance that he picks up Romney voters just like Bobby Baker picked up Clinton voters and Perot voters back in 1992 when he became the first statewide elected Republican on the Public Service Commission? Is there a chance Oppenheimer breaks through, Catherine?
I think there's a chance. He's been working really hard. He's been showing up at everything. He's been, Ted has done a really good job on social media, and he's gotten, there's been a lot of activity in that campaign, which I think is helpful. He outraised his opponent, so that's always a good sign. But, ultimately, he's a Democrat, and it's Georgia, and, what are the chances? I mean, I think it's possible. I know he does have a lot of Republican, Republican friends, and he says that he has, I've met him a few times. He says he has a lot of support from both sides of the aisle, but the bottom line is they've got to get into that voting booth and pull, vote for a Democrat, and how many people are willing to do that? I don't know.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely need some people that say, hey, I don't want to vote a straight ticket. And I do think there are people out there that just philosophically like, oh, I'm not going to vote a straight ticket for anybody, and they have to pick one Democrat out. And he'd have to kind of be that one Democrat in almost every race, not the county commissioner, not the, tax commissioner, sheriff, what have you. It'll have to be his race in certain places. I guess big counties like Gwinnett and Cobb to do it. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at a $5 Georgia lottery scratch-off, and on the back it said odds of winning, overall odds, 1 in 4. I believe Catherine's right. It's Georgia. He's a Democrat. It's a statewide race. And right now I wish the numbers were there because I believe the guy's run the best race he could run. And I think we probably had the best candidate we could have had right there. And if he's listening, I want him to know I really mean that. But I just don't think the numbers will be there, David. I'm going to be skeptical of that until somebody does break through in a statewide race. What about you?
And,
It's going to happen one time. I don't know if this is the year, but I do think he's actually going to run ahead of the president. Now,
whoa,
the president loses by 6 and he loses by 5. That still doesn't get him across the finish line, but, you know, it's just worth noting that I think he'll end up getting a larger percentage. Now, I should preface that he actually won't get more votes, because you do obviously have a lot of people that vote the top race or vote the top race or two and then quit voting. There's voter fall-off on
both sides. Well, I was
going to
ask you about that. Don't you get a little concerned, especially in public service commission races, that the average person don't even know that race is there and might just bypass it on their ballot?
And if they could bypass it on both sides. I mean, you know, there's going to be voter fall-off on both, you know, both the Democratic and Republican candidates. Also, that could be another race where people decide to vote for the Libertarian, because there's one race I think your choice is the Republican and the Libertarian. I personally just didn't even vote in that race. But
I like that Libertarian guy. He's a good guy. I'm voting for him.
I don't even know him. Yes, I don't even know him. And so I vote a straight Democratic ticket. I wish we had the option to vote a straight Democratic ticket. It would save me a lot of time. Because to me, who you choose to hang out with matters.
I agree. I absolutely agree with you. But he's better than his opponent. So
plus, I don't like Libertarians. Honestly, there's a lot of times, given the choice between a Libertarian and a Republican, I might choose the Republican, because sometimes I think Libertarians just care all about themselves, all about me. And sometimes Republicans might actually care about somebody else on something. But I think Libertarians are kind of very much the me party by definition.
Oh, I agree with you.
And I get kind of worried about that. Well, speaking of, I guess, Republicans that care about other people, we've got just maybe a few minutes before David Neer calls in. And Todd Akin, it came out that he was arrested 8 times protesting anti-abortion clinics. But I thought this is not exactly like he got caught for shoplifting or beating his wife or something like that. I mean, he was sort of using his First Amendment right. Now, he obviously was overzealous in using his First Amendment right. But we have, you know, people that are, you know, sitting members of Congress now that were, you know, got arrested for civil rights, you know, marches and what have you. Catherine, do you think these 8 arrests should count like 8, you know, criminal arrests, if you will, where he was, you know, perpetrating a, you know, flat-out property crime or something?
Well, I don't know very much about the arrests. What was he arrested for? I mean, like, just for protesting, or did he bomb an abortion clinic?
Probably he violated. No, it wasn't bombing or anything. I think it was pretty much like, let's say you're supposed to be 50 feet from the door. He was, you know, 30 feet from the door or something. I'm not exact on that, but I believe it was, you know, that type of thing. He violated the protest permit, if you will. Still should have learned the law, followed the law, not an excuse. I mean, and he may have actually gone in. I think one time or two he had to get carried out. So he may have actually completely violated. Let's see, especially 50 feet away, and he was on the front door, that kind of thing. Kind of
I wouldn't vote for him anyway. But, but
no, neither would I.
I can't really criticize people for using their, you know, First Amendment rights. And sometimes, I mean, I think there's certainly examples of people on our side getting arrested for fighting the good fight. So I hate to criticize someone on the other side for, I mean, like I said, I don't know that much about the actual arrests. 8 times seems like a lot, though.
Catherine,
you know,
I think it was this some of this Operation Rescue stuff, stuff, like Randall Terry and his people did at abortion clinics for years, where they would literally block the doors, physically try to keep people from going in.
Okay, well then, yeah,
sort of
he should be.
And I think that's essentially what most of it was, that sort of thing.
Well, I don't like that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and it was obviously, I mean, he was, I guess, interfering with commerce, one might say, or what have you. I mean, but it was obviously a different type of crime than some, and it just got brought out, and I wondered how it would play. Since Claire McCaskill is obviously not real popular with the Missouri electorate, I mean, she found just the right candidate in the right year to help her out, or it seems that way. It seems like she's going to win by single digits.
I was about to say, David, Aiken's past is not what's going to get him beat. It's his mouth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, this fits in with what he said. It shows that he's a, we'll be nice and say, a very true believer. I mean, he's willing to put his arrest record where his mouth is.
Yeah.
Or his, he was willing to put his mouth where his arrest record was, because this happened a while back. But it's just something to look at. Well, I think we have our guest for the evening to be with us the final 20 minutes. Welcome back, Mr. David Neer.
Thank you for having me back.
Yes, of course. Now, we know you're from the New York area, but you were fortunate in that you still retain power, and I guess that means that your house didn't flood. But then you've gotten out and gone all the way to Daily Co's headquarters out in California. Tell us about this journey.
That's exactly right. My wife and I were both extremely lucky that we lived in a part of Manhattan where the power stayed on the entire time, and we lived on a hill, so there was no flooding in our area. But obviously, as lucky as we've been, many, many other people have been met with great tragedy. Obviously, many people have died, and there are something like 30 to 40,000 people in the region without homes right now. So there is much, much work to be done, and a lot of people really need a lot of help right now.
Yeah, I guess when the election's over, since you live in New York, you can get back doing some really good work helping folks out there in your community. Well, I guess since we've got you on for politics, we'll put, you know, more important matters aside and talk politics. You used to run the Swing State Project, so let's talk about swing states, or surprise states in this case. David, presidentially, what do you think are going to be the surprises, or do you think there will be any for Mitt Romney and President Obama?
I don't feel like there are going to be any surprises. I think that the Beltway pundits want a narrative that this race is really close and that it's a toss-up and that it's anyone's game, but I think that the polling analysis shows that Obama has a very strong advantage right now, particularly when you look at the swing state polling, and I think that the president is going to win re-election, and you know, if Mitt Romney finds himself surprised that he doesn't have a job come Wednesday morning, that's the only thing that would surprise me.
Yeah, well, his job's hiding tax dollars, and I'm sure he'll continue to do that for many years to come. He's been doing it since, I guess, the 90s, according to a report today. Well, I'll ask you a quick follow-up on that. If you had 100,000 votes, we'll make it worth talking about, 100,000 early votes to give to the president, and the Romney campaign said, where would you put 100,000 early votes for their campaign? Which state would you place those in for each campaign?
That is an excellent, excellent question. I think, though, I'm going to have to punt, and I'm going to say Ohio. And I'm going to say this not because I think that Ohio is necessarily quite that close, but because of the status that Ohio occupies for both campaigns. Because if Obama wins Ohio, then it's extremely likely that he will win the Electoral College. On the other hand, if Romney can't win Ohio, then he has an incredibly, incredibly hard and unlikely path to victory in the Electoral College. So I think at this point, if you could, you know, wave a magic wand like that, I think you just got to go all in Ohio, no matter what the odds say. That said, I think that Obama is the definite favorite in Ohio and the definite favorite to win the whole thing.
Well, David, I'll take your answer. I won't do like the other McLaughlin, John McLaughlin, and say wrong. Population, he could win the state if it was President Obama, but I won't do that to you. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question before I pass it on to Catherine, then Kim. And that would be talking about two Senate races, which are sort of similar because of the Republican candidates. In Indiana, Murdoch made some controversial statements, and he's just tanked. In Missouri, Todd Akin made some controversial statements. He went down, but now he's back up, and he's at least in play, if you will. what's different about these two races to where Murdoch is just crashing and burning and Todd Akins staying afloat?
I think that those are two excellent races to compare. I think that's a really good question. And I would say the difference is that Murdoch decided to pick a very bad time to crash and burn, which was right before Election Day. And so the intensity of the media scrutiny was tremendous at a time when people are paying the most attention. And it also gave Murdoch the least amount of time to recover. Akin made his remarks several months ago, and it's not like he's run a terrific campaign since then, but Missouri, like Indiana, is also a very, very red state, and he's had simply more time for people to decide, yeah, I still really do hate Claire McCaskill and Barack Obama, and even though Todd Akin might be disgusting, I actually hate the Democrats more. So I really think that the difference is time.
Yes. Okay, well, I'm going to pass this around to Catherine first and then Tim.
Thanks so much for being on with us tonight. We really appreciate taking the time. And I just want to praise you for the elections portion of Daily Kos. It's very thorough and interesting, and you guys do a great job. I know it must be an incredible burden.
It's a lot of work, but kind words from people like you really keep us going, and we really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad you're doing it. I couldn't do it. I want to ask you, you know, here in Georgia, we don't have a lot to look forward to on Election Day. This year, we're probably going to lose complete control of our state legislature, and we have a horrible charter schools bill that's probably going to pass. The one bright spot looks like it might be John Barrow, and as a, you know, diehard liberal, I'm not a huge John Barrow fan, but he is sort of the last white guy standing in the South, but the recent polls are looking better for him. What do you think about that race?
You know, I think two things. I'm, you know, consider myself a dyed-in-the-wool progressive, and obviously it's hard to love John Barrow's politics, but what I always say is, you know, we're voting for the party, not the person, and what matters, of course, is who controls the House.
Right.
And, you know, the individual people who make it up tend to matter a lot less. That said, you know, obviously I think it's an extreme long shot for Nancy Pelosi to become Speaker again, but if we are ever to retake the House, then we are going to need some guys like John Barrow winning very difficult districts. So is he going to win? You know, we had this race slotted at lean Republican, which is it goes toss-up, lean Republican, likely Republican in terms of likelihood of victory. And we had a lean Republican for a very long time because John Barrow got the shaft in redistricting and Republicans are really gunning for him. But as you pointed out, the recent polling has actually been quite positive from the Democratic camp, and there haven't been any Republican internal polls. So what's happened here, I think it's a couple of things. I think the GOP wound up with a pretty weak candidate in Lee Anderson, who hasn't raised very much money, and what he did raise, he mostly spent it on winning the primary, which included a runoff, which I think John Barrow had to be extremely happy that turn of events transpired. Just very briefly, I think that Barrow was always more conservative than his district required, in my opinion. You know, the old version of the 12th actually went to Obama by 9 points, not what you'd consider, you know, necessarily an archetypally conservative southern district. And I think my hunch is that I think Barrow knew that this day was coming. He saw where politics in Georgia were headed. He figured that if he survived to 2012, he'd probably get targeted in redistricting by Republicans. And he made sure to cultivate a profile that's really quite conservative and that I do think is a good fit for that district. So we moved the race back to toss-up fairly recently, and I'm liking Barrow's chances right now.
Well, great. Thank you very much. And I know time is short, so I'm going to pass it over to Tim now. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good evening again, David. How are you, sir?
Doing quite well. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Listen, first of all, I had to tell you something right quick. Tom Jensen's been telling us on Facebook all weekend that Obama was going to win, and so I told him that I'd be sure to tell you that he beat you telling me that by 2 days. So I just wanted to throw that in there right quick. You know, you and I have talked about this race before. We've been watching that Virginia Senate race all year. Right now, the Real Clear Politics average has Kane ahead by, like, 0.8%. Is that about right? Is this race too close to call?
You know, we have it as toss-up. I definitely think Kane has the slight advantage, and here's why. First off, he's raised far more money than Allen, and it's not just the fact that Tim Kaine has more money to spend than George Allen, but I think it says something about the enthusiasm and energy behind both of those campaigns that Kaine has outraised Allen to the tune of seven figures. And I think Kaine has probably run a better campaign, though he's had some missteps. The other thing is, you know, those RCP averages, I haven't looked at the Virginia one lately, but you have to be careful with them because sometimes they include strange outlier polls. And recently, Roanoke College, they've had very, very strange polling for the entire cycle on this race, and they managed to find Allen with a five-point lead. No other reputable pollster has found Allen up. I mean, some of them have Kaine up one, some of them have Kaine up more like five. But mm-hmm. I think that if you're looking at Roanoke, that's probably skewing things a little bit too much in Allen's favor. So I would call Kaine the slight favorite. Like I said, we still have it a toss-up, but I think this is going to be a Democratic hold if I had to put money on it.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Now, I got to ask you about this race. We're going to drop down to the House now. Up in Minnesota, in her district, Michelle Bachmann has outspent her opponent, I think his name is Jim Graves, by like a 12-1 margin, and she certainly has both name recognition and a made-to-order red district as well. Yet, the news we keep hearing is that she's in real danger of losing. Do you have any idea what's going on there, what's driving that?
You know, I think that the Bachmann brand has been hurt, even though her district was made redder through redistricting. I think that any time you run for president, especially when you run for president and kind of it's not really clear why you're doing it and whether you have any chance, I think that hurts you back home. I think we saw that with Thad McConnor in Michigan, who couldn't even successfully file for the ballot again for his House race. I think we saw it a couple years ago with Chris Dodd in Connecticut, who wound up having to retire from the Senate because he looked like he was going to lose re-election. He also ran sort of one of these quixotic presidential campaigns, and I say that as a Chris Dodd fan for the most part. So I think that probably hurt Bachmann. And also one thing to note about her spending, and this is very important, is that she has an incredibly high burn rate. So you might notice her raising and spending a fortune. Allen West in Florida, also very similar profile, is very much the same way. And the reason why they have these very high burn rates is that they use something called direct mail fundraising, which raises a lot of money but costs a ton of money as well. So you might raise $3 million, but it costs you $2.5 million to raise that money. So or maybe even more. So you're netting out very little. So Bachmann's spending is actually not as impressive as it looks.
Oh, okay. And what do you think? You think she might lose?
You know, there's definitely a chance she might lose. We haven't been too bullish on that race. But like I said, with Bachmann's brand being so bad, you know, Jim Graves, the Democrat you mentioned, sort of having a kind of interesting profile. You know, he's not an elected official, which I think probably helps in most districts. There's definitely an upset possibility.
All right. Thank you, sir. David, back to you.
Yes, well, David, we've been so efficient. I'm going to take the liberty to ask a few more questions, if it's okay with you.
My pleasure.
Yes, well, there's three long-shot races that are in play, if you will. I say long-shot races for Democrats. Arizona with Richard Carmona, Heidi Kemp in North Dakota, and Bob Kerry re-elected to the Senate in Nebraska. What do you think our chances are in those three races?
You know, it's been an interesting year that we're talking about Arizona, North Dakota, and Nebraska as being possible chances for Democrats. Arizona, you know, Rich Carmona seems to run a very good campaign, though he might have made a couple of late stumbles. Unfortunately, PPP just came out with a new poll that has Jeff Flake up by five, and I'm not too surprised to see that, simply because Arizona is still quite a red state. And when you have a situation where, you know, it's sort of a toss-up race and both candidates are at 45, 46, 47%, at the end of the day, most of the undecided voters in a red state are going to be conservative, and in a blue state they're going to be liberal. And so I think it's just natural that some of these voters are coming home to Flake. Though that said, I still think a Carmona upset is possible. North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp could put on a clinic for how to run a race by a Democrat in a red state. She has been an exceptional candidate. She had a perfect profile as state attorney general. Her paid media has been exceptional. Her advertisements have just really been very notable and really, really good. And she also got very lucky. Rick Berg, the congressman there. He's run a poor campaign, and his ads have frankly sucked. And also, Rittberg has a weird likability problem. You know, you may have, we were talking about Minnesota a moment ago, you may have heard of the concept of Minnesota nice. In North Dakota, they call it North Dakota nice. You know, it's the state right next door. And people expect a certain friendliness and pleasantness and openness. And Rittberg seems to struggle with that. That said, you know, again, it's a very red state, and I think that that some of those remaining undecideds are more likely to come home for Berg than for Heitkamp. But I feel about as good as Heitkamp's chances as you could in a state like that. Nebraska, you know, that's just bizarre to me what's happened there. I had completely written Bob Kerrey off. I think so many other people had. You know, if Ben Nelson decided to retire rather than seek re-election, how is Kerry going to do any better than him? You know, Kerry hasn't run for office since the 1990s. But somehow it seems that his negative attacks on Deb Fischer, the Republican, have worked. Seems like maybe she was caught kind of sleepwalking, and sort of we've seen a few polls show Kerry only a few points behind. That said, Fisher's awfully close to 50%. It's way, way, way more competitive than it has any right to be, but I think it's still very much a long shot for Kerry to win. That said, his chances certainly seem better than they did a few weeks ago.
Yes, and it also may help in Nebraska, too, both in the congressional district and for the one electoral vote if he runs better.
That's certainly true, though, you know, that Nebraska 2nd Congressional District in the Omaha area, Obama hasn't really been competing for that vote this year. It seems kind of likely that it will go blue. But, you know, there's still, as you mentioned, a possibility of a long-shot upset in the House race where Lee Terry, Republican, is seeking re-election.
Okay. Well, your bread and butter is swing states and obviously smaller districts, congressional districts. And if we were to take the House, Nancy Pelosi would get the votes to, you know, most likely become Speaker again. What are some districts that we should watch for in different places?
I'm sorry, you cut out for a moment there. Can you ask that again?
Oh, sorry. What are going to be some of the districts that decide if the Democrats retake the House? I mean, I know it's the longest of shots compared to the presidency and the Senate, but if it were to happen, what are a few races to look for?
Sure. I'll mention a couple of races that you can look for on Tuesday night. New York's 27th. This is the congressional district won by Kathy Hochul in a special election last year. It was a major upset when she won. It was a rather conservative district then. It got made much more conservative in redistricting. She has run quite a good campaign, but she's running against a self-funder, former local elected official in the area, Chris Collins. If Hochul is finding a way to hold on election night, that is a very positive sign. On the other side, I'll look at a race. We have that race slotted in at lean Republican right now. I'll talk about another lean Republican race, which is Nevada's 3rd congressional district. This was won by Joe Heck in 2010. He won by a very narrow margin, and it's still a blue-tilting district. The Democratic recruit is John Osagera. He's a state legislator there. He has not run the best of campaigns, and this is sort of points to a kind of a broader problem we've had with recruitment. It's very hard to recruit people when you're 25 seats in the hole. But on paper, Nevada's 3rd is an Obama-leaning district, like I said, and it's the kind of place where we would probably really need to win in order to have a chance of gaining back the House. Again, we have that one as lean Republican as well. So if for some reason there are all these undetected Obama votes in Nevada, which may be possible, it's sort of a quirky state to poll, and John Osagera is somehow holding Joe Heck very, very close or winning, then perhaps we will pull off the longest of long shots. But like I said, it's not really something I would count on.
Yes. Well, David, thank you again for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and we'll be looking at your work on Elections Daily Kos from the Daily Kos headquarters.
That's right. Thank you guys again for having me on, and I hope to come back after the election. We'll talk about everything that went down.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again. All right. Well, we've just got seconds left, and as we were talking, of course, I was looking at Daily Kos, not the elections page, but the general, and they had the Scholastic elections results, not only nationally that the president won, but the state-by-state. Interestingly enough, the president won South Carolina but lost Virginia. So that could be an interesting good sign and an interesting bad sign, if you will. Will the adults vote different than the children in those two states? President also won Arizona, and everything else, I guess, would held form, if you will. So that's an interesting piece of information, if you will, to add to the polls and the prognostications and projections and everything else. Well, guys, this will be your last chance to say anything before election 2012 on the kudzu vine. Any final words or predictions?
Vote no on one.
There we go. I already have, and good luck to everybody and their candidates this listening in both parties Tuesday night.
Yes, that makes three of us on no one, and Catherine will vote, and there'll be the three of us all voted, and I'm sure many, many more listeners will do the same, and we'll be here next week to talk about the autopsy, I guess you will, and then dissect what happened.
Good night, everybody.
Guys. Evening.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.